I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to discuss the ongoing controversy surrounding the EpiPen, a medical device designed to help people who are having allergic emergencies. Prices for the EpiPen have climbed 600% in the past 7 years, provoking outrage and congressional investigations. We'll dive into the controversy today with my guests, both of them doctors, Dr. David Patterson of the Allergy Academy and Dr. Mark Holbreich, who has published in the New England Journal of Medicine on allergies and asthma. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the ongoing EpiPen controversy today on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are local allergist Dr. David Patterson of Academy Allergy and Dr. Mark Holbreich, also a local allergist and one of the authors of the recently published New England Journal of Medicine study on the prevalence of asthma and allergies in the Amish versus the Hutterite populations. Did I pronounce that right?
I got it right.
Yeah, good. Okay, well, I'd like to welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So I think with subjects like this, I've learned in the past, it's best to start, I always, when I'm in the classroom, I always ask my students, I said, okay, if anyone doesn't understand the term I just used, look down at your shoes right now. And inevitably, three or four pairs of eyes shoot down. So I'm going to do something. I'm not going to embarrass our audience, but we probably ought to talk about what an EpiPen is, why people care about this, why it matters so much. I'll start with you, Dr. Patterson.
So EpiPens are devices that automatically inject, with just some force, automatically inject a life-saving dose of epinephrine. Epinephrine is a very unique drug. When you're having a life-threatening allergic reaction, it has a number of actions in the body that can save a person's life. And those actions include helping the heart beat stronger, helping up your blood pressure and keep you out of shock, helping relax the muscles in your airways, and helping from releasing more allergic mediators from white blood cells that are perpetuating the allergic reaction. It helps to shut that down. So epinephrine has a number of actions that help save a person from a life-threatening allergic reaction.
Dr. Holbreich, how long have EpiPens been around?
They've been around for many, many years, and different companies made them, but now primarily EpiPen is the one that's used.
Okay. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Allison. And again, if you'd like to join the conversation by email, you can send your email to us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Allison writes, seeing as how the expensive part of the EpiPen is not the epi, which is a cheap generic substance, but rather the pen, which is the delivery device and under patent, why are schools which have an on-duty nurse paying Mylan's exorbitant prices for the pen when they could simply store a vial of, and I'm going to add, the epi, it's
epinephrine.
When they could just store a vial of epinephrine at room temperature and away from light, excess heat, moisture, and inject it in the middle, the outer side of the thigh with a cheap and available hypodermic needle as needed. I know that is not the common practice. Mylan is also cornered the market in online information and searches on epinephrine, consistently refer to the automatic delivery service. So are there ways actually you could get around using an EpiPen? I'll start with Dr. Holbreich on that one since I threw the first one to Dr. Patterson.
Well, we do that exact same thing in our office because we do allergy injections and patients can have an anaphylactic reaction to an injection. So we do it that way. I think the issue is for a family, there's an issue of the need for something in an emergency. So a school nurse potentially could do it, but I think the general consensus is that in the midst of a life-threatening reaction, you want something that's quick, easy, and easy to do for the patient.
Dr. Patterson, it sounds like what I'm reading between the lines in your answer here, too, is you'd need a fair amount of training to do this right with a hypodermic
needle, right? If you have a registered nurse at a school, that wouldn't be a problem. At home, I think it's a bigger problem. But one of my colleagues in Ohio published an editorial, and he titled it The $5 Solution to the $600 Problem. Mm-hmm. And in that, he was saying exactly what the listener is alluding to, which is for about $5, schools could get bottles of epinephrine at about $5 a bottle, so they could get as many as they wanted, and disperse them around. And as long as they had a registered nurse to administer the epi in the appropriate situation, it would be fine. I've talked to Jolene Brickhale, who's the RN who's head of all the school nurses for the state of Indiana, and she supports that. The issue that we'd have in the state of Indiana is our legislation, which Dr. Holbrook and I and some other very talented and devoted people got passed in 2014, our legislature. The legislation says auto-injectable epinephrine, so we need to change that legislation, which would just be changing the wording slightly, and then schools would be covered. That legislation was critical because it did several things. It took the liability away from the prescribing providers who prescribed auto-injectable epinephrine for schools, and it also took away their liability for the administering nurse or volunteer as long as they were doing it, in a Good Samaritan way. So we need to slightly change that legislation. The problem with schools getting stock epinephrine, and about 80% of our schools have stock epinephrine now in the state of Indiana, is they worry about liability. That's their major concern.
How many people does this affect? I mean, how many people are likely to have to use an EpiPen or some substitute in this kind of how common are these allergic emergencies? I'll toss that one to either one of you, whichever would like to answer first.
I think I'll let David address Indiana.
I can simply say that, again, talking to Jolene Brickhale the other day, who's our mm-hmm. school nurse for the state of Indiana, who's head in the Department of Education, she told me that in tracking epinephrine use, EpiPen use, last year in our schools with 1.1 million students covered in the state of Indiana, there were 250 reported cases of epinephrine use. Now, I don't know if that was stock epinephrine or children's EpiPens, but there were still 250 cases. So potentially last year in our schools in the state of Indiana, we saved at least 250 lives. That's huge.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask this, because most of the controversy is focused on the fact that the cost of these things has accelerated pretty rapidly. The number we hear, and that's been reported over and over again, is that it's climbed about 600%, that it was $100, in 2009, and now it's $600. What accounts for the increase in prices, particularly since it seems like it's been around for a while? Normally, costs go down the longer something.
Well, I think that's the frustration. The public is frustrated because epinephrine has been around since around the turn of the century, and the device has been around about 30 years. So with an old drug and a relatively old device, why are you continuing to increase the price? And I think the answer is because they can. Pharmaceutical companies like Mylan have a regulated monopoly, and they've increased the price about 18 times since they've had the drug. When you have a monopoly, there are price setters and price takers, and Mylan's the price setter, and the public is the price taker. And as Heather Bresch said on MSNBC, this really isn't a Mylan or EpiPen problem. This is a pharmaceutical industry problem. And I don't know mm-hmm. how much we want to get into that this hour, but across the board, many of your name brand pharmaceuticals are going up tremendously in price. And I saw a survey recently where 80% of the public favors some sort of legislation to control pharmaceutical prices. And so there's always two sides of the pharmaceutical price story. Pharmaceuticals save a lot of lives and help our quality of lives. But the question is, how much are we paying, and are we paying too much? And we seem to pay a lot more relative to other countries in the world. And is it really necessary to do that? So it's a big controversy.
And the argument basically for these drugs being given, or these devices such as the EpiPen, monopolies for a period, is to allow the companies that have developed them to recover some of the research and development costs, right? Because it can be so expensive to put these things together. And in the case of Mylan, correct me if I'm wrong, they have a patent and a virtual monopoly for another 9 years until 2025.
I believe that's correct. And the cost of making drugs is increasing. And right now, I've had some colleagues at Lilly tell me it's well over $1 billion to develop a drug, and it just keeps going up. So, you know, part of that relates to the FDA approval process and other parts of the approval process. But as a society, we've got to find a way to get drugs to the market without having to cost so much.
We've gotten an email question from our regular listener named Jerry. He says, I do not think that the founding fathers, when they enshrined the concepts of patent and copyright into the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Item 8, this is what I love about this show. We have really, really smart listeners. They do their homework. Foresaw the abuses of these practices wrought by modern American capitalism. To the panelist, is it not the duty of government to regulate patents and copyrights in the public interest rather than purely in the private interest of the corporations? I'd like to hear both your thoughts on that. I'll start with you, Dr. Holbreich.
Well, that's a little bit beyond my scope. I mean, I might just pass that right over to Dr. Patterson. It's a smarter question than I have a good answer for.
Well, I mean, I you know, we live in a democracy, and we live in a capitalist society, and the pharmaceutical lobby is very strong. And you've seen a recent huge discussion on Capitol Hill about this EpiPen controversy. The problem that I see as a consumer and as a physician is there's a lot of political discussion, but not a lot gets done because at the end of the day, lobbyists seem to come in and quiet everything down and nothing gets done. I think we need to have a serious discussion in this country about drug prices. And when we start to have that discussion, I'm afraid that the extremes start to take over and the moderates in the middle sort of get drowned out. The extreme being that pharmaceutical companies are horrible corporate monopolies that just, you know, put it to the consumer. And the other extreme is that pharmaceutical companies are not getting paid enough, they're not making enough money, and they're wonderful companies. And I think the truth is in the middle, and we need to have an adult discussion in this country about where we're going and what is fair pricing for drugs, just like they do in every other country.
Are there models? How do other countries deal with this?
Well,
because presumably they have similar challenges.
Well, they do and they don't. The big difference is, and fair disclosure, I have a business degree in addition to a medical degree, so I have a little bit of a different understanding on this. But in other countries, like in Europe, instead of having monopoly, there's a monopsony. And with a monopsony, unlike a monopoly is one seller, a monopsony is one buyer. So when Mylan goes to, for example, the UK and says, all right, we want to sell the EpiPens, the UK says, okay, you want to sell your EpiPen here? Here's what we're going to give you for it. Take it or leave it. So therefore, they have bargaining power, and they have the ability to bargain prices, which we don't have in this country. So that makes prices quite a bit lower. I'm told that if you're in Europe, you can get an EpiPen for around $110. So that's radically different than what it is here.
And has that always been in place in Europe? Has it always been a different system?
I think for a long time it has, anyway.
Okay, and would that be one of the areas that opponents of any sort of healthcare reform or whatever referred to as socialized medicine?
Right. That goes down to the universal payer model. And, you know, people say, well, you know, look at Canada and the UK. You have to wait forever to get healthcare. And, you know, there are, like any model, there are advantages and disadvantages to all healthcare models.
So in terms of this, then, though, there are no, that we are aware of, market forces forcing up the price of the EpiPen. Certainly not 600% worth.
No, but there is good news for the consumer on the consumer front. Teva, which is an Israeli generic pharmaceutical maker, is probably going to come through with their generic EpiPen in 2017. So that hopefully will help drive down prices. However, it takes a number of generic entrants in the market before you really get a dramatic drop in prices.
How many?
Studies show if there's 8 generic makers in the market, you can drive the price down to 20% of the brand name price.
And are those, I'm presuming, and I'm probably about to enter into dangerous waters in terms of my own knowledge of this, do they have to be foreign makers to in effect evade the U.S. patent law?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's true at all. Just any generic manufacturer, you know, helps drive up competition and drive down price.
Okay. If you are just joining us, we are talking about the ongoing EpiPen controversy. It's one, a controversy clearly that is capturing an awful lot of attention. My guests are local allergist Dr. David Patterson of Academy Allergy and Dr. Mark Holbreich, who is also a local allergist and is one of the authors of a recently published New England Journal of Medicine study on the prevalence of asthma and allergies in the Amish versus the Hutterite populations. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the ongoing EpiPen controversy. My guests are local allergist Dr. David Patterson of Academy Allergy and Dr. Mark Holbreich, also a local allergist, one of the authors of a recently published New England Journal of Medicine study on the prevalence of asthma and allergies in the Amish versus the Hutterite populations. If you'd like to join this conversation, and I can tell already that quite a few people do, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener, such as Dr. Boslett, who is on the line with us now, and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Dr. Boslett, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say a few comments. I'm a pediatrician at Witham Health Services up in Boone County, and I'm the current president of the Indiana chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. I also have two 10-year-old boys who have a peanut allergy, and we've used epinephrine twice in our family, once at home and once at school. So I come at this from many different angles. And I've had the pleasure of working with Dr. Patterson and Dr. Holbreich on various things related to epinephrine. I did want to comment. I know there was a question about using vials and syringes at schools and things. I will say that my experience has been with my own sons that it's a very scary process, even for a pediatrician, to go through, to have to give epinephrine at home. It was also very nerve-wracking for the staff at the school. And so it is important that the administration be simple, like it was said, because you don't have the time and the brain power to focus on drawing up the medicine and giving it correctly. It's much simpler with an auto injector, unfortunately, just a lot more expensive.
Well, thank you very much for the call and for sharing your perspective. And that probably is an angle here that we haven't talked about, is the high stress really of these situations when someone is going into allergic emergency. Thank you again for the call.
Absolutely.
Certainly. So let's talk a little bit about that, because that really seems to be the argument for the EpiPen here, is when something like this is happening, and Dr. Patterson, you mentioned the last segment, you know, we had 250 of these incidents that we know of last year in Indiana, 250 kids whose lives were saved. What are some of the symptoms? I mean, is an allergic emergency something that is defined as something that is truly life-threatening, or how do we define the idea of an allergic emergency first? Dr. Holbreich, he's pitching that one to you. I guess he's getting even with you.
An allergic emergency can happen with a few common things. One of the most common is the ingestion of a food that someone is allergic to. Another common one is a sting from an insect, like a yellow jacket, and occasionally drugs. So what happens is the body, as Dr. Patterson had mentioned, starts releasing all of these mediators immediately, and individuals get hives, difficulty breathing. In adults who have gone through this, it's something interesting. When you ask them how they feel, they say, "I felt like I was going to die." Yeah. There's this impending sense of doom. So it's really a serious reaction. Now, deciding do you need an EpiPen or not is a very difficult decision, and some families opt to just go to the emergency room to be observed. But when you need it, it is life-saving.
And what should be, you know, if you're trying to make the decision about whether you need an EpiPen or not, or I suspect in many cases also parents thinking, do we need an EpiPen? Do we need to have it available for our children? Because it sounds like that is one of the primary focus areas here. What are sort of the criteria for saying, I should have one of these. I should invest the funds in it. Dr. Patterson.
Well, I think Dr. Holbrook and I would both say that you need a history compatible with a life-threatening allergic reaction to a bee sting or a food or a drug. And when it comes to stinging venoms or foods, we do testing to those items. And some drugs we can test to as well. So we like to have both a history and some testing that we can do. And the problem with our testing, whether it's blood testing or food testing or skin testing for food allergens, is that it has a high rate of false positives. So a lot of people are told they're allergic to foods when they're not. And so they're avoiding foods, they're getting EpiPens, and they actually don't need them. There are a lot of reactions that children and adults have to foods that are not food allergies. They may have food poisoning, they may have lactose intolerance, they may have irritable bowel syndrome. I could go on and on. There's a lot of things that appear to be food-related, that appear to be a food allergen, but they're really not an IgE-mediated, life-threatening allergic reaction that you need an EpiPen for. So it's very important.
If I could step in, for those of us who don't speak medicine, IgE.
IgE is the allergic antibody in the blood that binds to the mast cell and causes the release of all these horrible chemicals that give you this allergic reaction.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Laura. And if you want to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Laura says a TV doctor had a show that featured the EpiPen and said there is a generic of the EpiPen, but the doctor has to write the prescription for Adrenaclick, not as the generic version of EpiPen. His specialist said the cost is more like $150 compared to the EpiPen $600. Do either of you know anything about this? Is it a valid solution or a valid way to contain costs?
It would be if they could produce enough, but the Adrenaclick, they can't produce enough pens to even come close to saturating the demand. So when Dr. Holbrush and I and our colleagues give someone a prescription for a generic EpiPen, whether we write or we write Adrenaclick, the patient inevitably calls back or comes back and says, I couldn't find it. So from price perspective, it is cheaper, but if you can't get it, it doesn't matter.
What accounts for the problem? It sounds like there would be a demand, and normally you can.
There is a demand, but it's made by IPAX Labs, and they just can't produce it fast enough. It's actually put together by hand, not by machine. And so they can't make as many. Now, they're trying to change the production over to make it by machine, but they just can't make as many to meet the demand right now.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the EpiPen controversy. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz, as Barbara has done, at 866-476-3881. Barbara, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
I have three things, and I'll try to make it really brief. I lived overseas for 10 years in the 80s and worked for a Dutch pharmaceutical firm, a small one. And one of the last jobs I did there was to harmonize the FDA and NATO requirements for the manufacturing of EpiPens. Mm-hmm. They weren't EpiPens. We called them, I can't remember right now because I'm nervous.
That's okay. Need to be nervous. You're talking with friends.
These pens were supplied to troops all over the world, and especially to NATO troops. So that's another use for these, I hate to call them EpiPens, but auto-injectors is mm-hmm. what we called them. This was in the 1988, and they certainly were very affordable then. I don't know if my company is still manufacturing or not. Another thing I wanted to say was while I was over there, that was pre-European Union, but in the under the European Union, they have one set of pre-registration requirements, like similar to the FDA's. And but at that time, each company registered its new products individually all over Europe, and ours also all over the world. And they knew exactly which country to register in first, Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And the sequence of registration, U.S. was fairly high up on that list. Mm-hmm. France also, because of the large population in France, but they did not lose a dime anywhere.
Okay.
On anything. And they had all of their development costs and manufacturing development costs and drug costs. The goal was to have that finished in 2 years after registration.
Okay.
And I don't believe that any, they're all international companies now. I don't believe that any company anywhere had any other kind of goal. And when the
Barbara, and let me step in because I want to, you've given us a lot of information. I want to let Dr. Holbreich and Dr. Patterson have a chance to comment on it,
okay,
if that's okay. Thank you very much for the call and for sharing that information. So, some of this, and what I'm getting here, is that there are sort of competing imperatives here. I mean, you both operate as people who are dedicated to preserving people's health and their lives. As Dr. Patterson has pointed out, these companies have to make money to stay in business. Is it frustrating, though, to know that, as healers, that these devices, the technology is available, but the price point may put it out of the hands of some of the people who really, really need it? Dr. Holbreich.
Well, I think that's the case. I mean, we know that as physicians and across the board, what we call adherence, the willingness of patients to do what we tell them to do is pretty low. So we don't know when we hand them the prescription whether they'll ever fill it. And I'm sure there are patients who go to the pharmacy who are faced with a $600 out of pocket and just don't get it and take their chances. I explain to patients that getting an EpiPen is sort of getting an insurance policy for your child or yourself, and you just have to say, listen, this is potentially life-threatening. But I think there are lots of studies that show that for any disease, whether it's diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, when the price of the drugs are high, people often don't fill their prescriptions or don't take the medications the way they're intended to be used.
We've gotten question from a listener on Facebook, and if you want to find us on Facebook, we are at No Limits WFYI. Listener says, in my early 20s, I was stung by yellow jackets and went into anaphylactic shock. I'd been stung plenty of times in my life before that, including a couple of times that same year, and walked away feeling fine other than minor swelling where I was stung. How common is it for people to develop life-threatening allergies later in life? Dr. Holbreich.
I think for foods, those are primarily childhood allergies, and they often outgrow them, with the exception of nuts and shellfish. So for adults, you can develop a new food allergy when we say later in life. We're talking your 20s or 30s. And that
it doesn't seem that late to any of us. But,
no, it doesn't. But I would say that's primarily fish or shellfish or nuts. Insect stings you can develop at any point in your life.
Okay, so that can happen. And I should say, I sympathize here with the listener because I'm allergic to bee stings, but I've noticed particularly they were dangerous for me in my childhood, but less so. I've been stung a couple of times since then and have not really had a profound. Do allergies fade away? Is it possible for them to disappear over time?
Well, that that could be, but it also could be that you depends upon what insect you're stung by. You may be allergic to one stinging insect, but not another. And also, when you're stung by a stinging insect, the amount of venom they deliver in a sting is pretty variable. So if you get a higher dose of venom, you're more apt to get a systemic reaction. So there's other variables there that could determine whether or not you have a reaction.
We are talking about the EpiPen controversy here on No Limits. you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Kenny, welcome to the program.
Hi. I think that one of the issues that's being missed here, and that at least hasn't been brought up yet, is the fact that the CEO of Mylan Pharmaceuticals had her name is Heather Bresch, had her salary raised from roughly $3 million a year, which is a grand salary for anybody in the world, although we know salaries in this country are way over that and outrageously so. But nevertheless, had her salary raised from $3 million a year to about $17 million. That was the amount of her raise. And if you do the numbers on that, the EpiPen used to be $100 roughly before they did this outrageous increase of the price. Her raise alone would have paid for 170,000 EpiPens in the marketplace, for what it's worth. And if for people who have an insurance premium of $200 a month, that would pay for the annual insurance premiums of 7,000 Americans. Okay, and that's the kind of disparity that we have in this country now. And for the doctor who said, when he was asked a question about this social justice question earlier in the program, my father was a doctor, by the way, and he would have easily known the answer to that, that it's outrageous that you can have this kind of social disparity in the marketplace. And this United States is one of the few countries in the world that allows your health care to be a profit center, our children in schools to be a profit center. And it's just, everything is just out of kilter now. And that's my comment on this whole issue. I don't know where we're going in this country. With the 1%. I mean, I'm a business person. I don't even have time to make this call. I'm a busy guy. But this whole thing of, I think there's an ethical way to do capitalism and free enterprise. And the worst examples we're seeing now in the news, Donald Trump and this person, these mm-hmm. kinds of raises for no reason. This is the kind of example young people are getting for how you treat the people in the marketplace at this point. And it's just really disheartening and outrageous.
Kenny, thank you very much for the call. I'm going to give Dr. Patterson, since he's the one who made a comment, a chance to respond. But thank you again for the call.
Well, I would certainly agree with the caller. But on the other hand, from a pure business standpoint, and we live in a capitalist society that is run based on business, the stockholders rewarded her because when she took over the company, her market share with the drug was $250 million. And she took it to a blockbuster drug, which is $1 billion in sales. Now, she did that at the expense of the public, obviously, by raising the price like 17 times. That's what the stockholders wanted her to do, or at least that's what the stockholders, they want a fair return on their investment. And so she's doing, in some instances, what stockholders want the CEOs to do, is to maximize their revenue. This gets into the whole much bigger discussion of what's the responsibility of corporations, and what responsibility do they have to the communities they live in? And I was noticing one of the professors from the Harvard Business School was saying that these corporations have a responsibility to the communities they're in, and the responsibility is not necessarily to the shareholders, it's to the communities, and it's not just about maximizing profit. And I think that's where the discussion needs to go. And unfortunately, I think in this country, it's all about maximizing profit, where really we need to talk about corporations with social responsibility.
And how do we go about forcing that kind of conversation right now?
Well, I think you look at other companies that are doing it. You look at the shoe company, you look at companies like Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream, it's Tom's Shoes, and you look at those other companies that have a model for doing that, and you say, why can't we make this a more broader model, and why can't more companies be like this?
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the EpiPen controversy that has been ongoing, has been the subject of congressional hearings. My guests are two local allergists, Dr. David Patterson of Academy Allergy and Dr. Mark Holbreich, who has recently published a study in the New England Journal of Medicine on the prevalence of asthma and allergies in the Amish versus the Hutterite populations. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the ongoing EpiPen controversy. My guests are local allergist Dr. David Patterson of Academy Allergy and Dr. Mark Holbreich, who's also a local allergist, and recently was one of the authors of a study in the New England Journal of Medicine on the prevalence of asthma and allergies in the Amish versus the Hutterite populations. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Jeff has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi. One of the concerns that I have as a parent who's been purchasing the EpiPen now for 13 years is the extremely short shelf life. I mean, it's a sealed container. It looks like they could cut the demand of that in half by simply making the prescriptions valid for more than 1 year. And I guess I don't understand, as someone who thinks mechanically, why, if it's a sealed container, is it only good for a single year? We spend $1,200 a year, one for school and one for home, and that's it's crippling. It seems as if they would just double the shelf life, they would cut the demand in half.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Jeff. We'll try to get an answer for you.
So the EpiPens come off the assembly line with a 20-month expiration for the EpiPen, and for the EpiPen Junior, it's 19 months. One of the complaints I've had is that, as a physician, is just what the caller's pointing out. Dr. Holbreich and I both have patients who go to the pharmacy and get EpiPens that might expire in 3 months, 6 months. That just increases the cost. And so I'm working with our State Board of Pharmacy to get legislation passed in the next legislature to mandate that pharmacies not give out EpiPens with less than a 12-month expiration. Furthermore, what infuriates me is that pharmacies, if they have a short-dated EpiPen that's going to expire in 6 months or less, they can send that back to Mylan Labs and get another one for free. So I don't know why they would give it out to a consumer instead of sending it back and get another one free. I'm just as irritated about that as the caller is.
Gotten an email from a listener named Sally, and again, if you want to find us via email or reach out to us, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Sally writes, I've been skin tested and prescribed an EpiPen. Those symptoms, if any, never seemed bad. How can I check if they were false positives? Dr. Holbreich.
Well, I think Dr. Patterson and I would agree that the prescription of an EpiPen is basically giving someone the advice that you need to have this because you have a potentially life-threatening allergy. So a patient needs a history, as we've mentioned before. They need a convincing skin test or blood test that shows a significant allergy. So we certainly think there are patients who have EpiPens prescribed for them who don't need them. So if you're going to be given the advice of having something with you 24/7 for the rest of your life, you'd want to have someone who's an expert in the field of allergy giving you advice about the use.
We've got another email from a listener named Veronica. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. And Veronica's broadening the discussion, saying that these forces aren't necessarily confined to EpiPens. She says, I have type 1 diabetes, and over the past 15 years, I too have noticed a drastic increase in the price of my insulin. Last year, about 25%. Insulin alone is about $700 a month, plus the insulin pump itself, testing strips, syringes, etc. of my income went to medical costs, including insulin and devices needed to manage my health. Do you foresee the EpiPen conversation helping people like me in regards to high medical costs? Because it is, we're talking about the EpiPen here, but the conversation has made it clear that this is a much larger discussion about how we manage and make decisions about health care and how we contain the costs. I'd like to hear both of your thoughts on this one. So I'll start with Dr. Patterson, then go to Dr. Holbreich.
So as we were talking before we went on the air, John, there was a story on World News last night with Lester Holt where two of the big pharmaceutical benefit companies, CVS and Express Scripts, starting, I believe, next year, are not going to cover 200 of the most common drugs used for things like asthma and diabetes. So they won't be covering name-brand abs and medicines. They won't be covering insulin. They're doing this in an effort to drive consumers to cheaper generics, which is okay if you have generics. Right now, we don't have generic controller asthma medicines except Montelukast, which doesn't work for a lot of people. And it's my knowledge that we don't have generic insulin right now. So this is creating a real havoc for patients, and it's a discussion that is much broader than Mylan and EpiPens. And I believe the caller is exactly right. I hope that this public effort and this public outreach and this public outrage will motivate our legislators on the state and national level to have a discussion and make some changes about how we price drugs so consumers can afford them. There's nothing more frustrating as a physician than to prescribe a drug that your patient can't afford and can't get.
Dr. Holbrush.
I think I agree with everything Dr. Patterson said. I mean, we use this term cost shifting, and the cost, unfortunately, of being shifted to the patient. So when it used to be a $5 copay, now it's a $75 or $100 copay. And when it was a $10 to get your medications, now you're paying large prices. So unfortunately, the consumer or the patient is the one who's footing the bill for a lot of the healthcare costs.
Is this in part a product also of these exploding costs, product of the fact that the American population is aging?
Well, I think that's part of it. The other part of it is the increasing cost of health insurance. Mm-hmm. What's happening is the insurance companies are going to high deductibles so that they can make the premiums affordable for patients. Okay, so a patient signs up for a health insurance plan and says, well, the premiums seem pretty realistic. But then they go to get a prescription filled and realize they have to cover the first $5,000 or $10,000 of medical care out of their pocket. They don't have the money to do that. They go to get some medicines filled. And actually, believe it or not, the cost of an EpiPen now is over $700 at the local pharmacy. We just called a few days ago. And so they get sticker shock, and they just can't afford their medicines.
We are talking about the ongoing EpiPen controversy and where it is taking us. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what Zach has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Zach, welcome to the program.
Yeah, quick question. Is the EpiPen like other drugs that the doctor is given a cut after writing the prescription for it?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I see Dr. Patterson shaking his head, but we actually need words on radio. So.
Yeah, we don't get a cut of the drugs that we prescribe. There's very, very few drugs that physicians get a cut, maybe oncology drugs, maybe some of our gamma globin we use. But for the vast majority of drugs that we prescribe as physicians, we don't get any remuneration from that.
Has this these controversies, these exploding costs, has it affected the business model of practicing medicine? And if so, in what ways? Dr.
Well, I think, you know, Dr. Patterson has his MBA. I have my MD. So, you know, my goal is to provide the best care for my patients at a reasonable cost. So I try to use generic medications when possible and try to help the patients understand costs. But for this particular case, EpiPen, we have no choice except to use it. So we try to keep costs in mind. But the economics of medicine is when you sit down with a patient, you try to do the best you can for them, and that's our goal.
We are talking about the EpiPen controversy. We've gotten a comment question from a listener named Michelle via Facebook, and you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Michelle writes, in my sarcastic tone, so if making a profit in order to develop life-saving medicines is the true motive, let's see manufacturers spend more money on research than they do on marketing. And, oh, by the way, somehow the companies are able to survive, even though every other industrial country in the world controls drug prices except the United States. Is some of this that there needs to be more government regulation, or at least more thought about whether monopolies should be granted for patents that create virtual monopolies? Are we going to have to take a look at that, Dr. Patterson?
Well, that depends on who you talk to. I'm sure if John Licklider, who was the CEO of Lilly, was sitting in this seat, he might have a little different view.
That's okay. He's welcome to call in, or he's welcome to come in and talk about it. Yeah.
I mean, I think, again, going back to the survey of the general public recently, where 80% of people said they thought there needed to be some regulation, I think that the public is ready for some control of costs and some discussion about patent life and what it costs. And I think the public is a little bit frustrated because of the lack of transparency. There's millions and millions of dollars spent on direct-to-consumer advertising, but pharmaceutical companies are not forthcoming in how much they spend on research. And I think the public deserves some transparency there. The other issue that the public gets riled up about, justifiably so, is that a lot of research for pharmaceuticals is done and paid by taxpayer dollars at academic institutions before it's turned over to a pharmaceutical company to develop a drug. So part of this research has already been paid for by our tax dollars, and yet we're being charged again for it. So that's a frustration as well.
So, yeah, ultimately, the consumers pay on the front end and then they pay on the back
yes.
end as well.
Yes.
And often they pay at a point where, I mean, I think the stories from the parents here that we've gotten during this hour, as a father myself, my response is going to be, if you tell me my child's life is going to be threatened by anything and this is the only possible response to it, my reaction is going to be, take my house, take whatever. I want to keep my
yes,
kid
but
alive.
Yes, but I think there is a yeah. there is a way to save on this.
And yeah.
I published an article in Curtin Carmel recently, an editorial. Why we have all these EpiPens in school is a little bit beyond me. If we had stock Epi in schools and people sent their EpiPens to schools when kids go on a field trip, we would save millions of dollars as a society. Having a school with 50 EpiPens in a drawer for a nurse to rifle through when Johnny's having a reaction does not make the school any safer. We need schools, all schools, not 80% in Indiana, but 100%. We need all schools to have stock epinephrine, the autoinjector. Mm-hmm. And the rationale there, the model is Narcan. There's a big push now to get Narcan in schools. Why? Because we want to save kids' lives when they overdose. EpiPens are no different.
We are talking about the EpiPen controversy here on No Limits. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hello. I came late to the conversation, so you may have talked about this, but I was wondering if I heard something that Mylan has a monopoly on these because the FDA hasn't approved other injectable auto-inject devices. If you could talk about that.
Certainly. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Mike. We alluded to it, but I don't think we thoroughly discussed it.
So Teva Pharmaceuticals, the Israeli generic manufacturer, put forth a drug application last year for the FDA for their version of the EpiPen, and Mylan blocked it, and they blocked it by going to the FDA saying their device is not as similar to our device as we think it should be, therefore consumers are going to be confused, therefore you should block it. And indeed, the FDA did block it, and they really didn't justify the reasons why they blocked it in any public report that I'm aware of. Now, Teva's going to try to reintroduce it this year, but this is another example of obstruction to getting drugs to the market that could help the public by pharmaceutical companies.
Gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Krista. Again, if you want to find us on Facebook, we are at No Limits WFYI. Krista says, thank you for this important conversation. What kind of training information should medical students and residents receive about prescription costs? Dr. Holbrush.
Well, I should get my daughter on the phone. She's a second-year medical student and ask her what she's learning. But I do think that it's a long time since I've been in medical school, Dr. Patterson may comment, but I do think, at least from talking to my daughter, that they seem much more socially conscious about healthcare and healthcare issues. So I do think that medical schools do take that into consideration in their training, and that is the social aspect and the economic costs of medicine these days.
I remember having a conversation some years ago, sort of between the two major healthcare reform pushes, the one in the early to mid-90s and then the most recent one. Said with the one in the early 90s, and I think this is what I was trying to get at about how it has changed the practice of medicine, is that doctors, many of whom go into the practice of medicine simply because they want to help people. They expect, obviously, a decent lifestyle in return for that, for their labors. But they aren't, by and large, with the exception of you, Dr. Patterson, with the MBA, realized, trained as business people. And they found with the insurance companies out of the first time healthcare reform failed in the 90s, that they were thrown into negotiations with insurance companies over and over again. And at least the doctor I talked to said, you know, we suddenly found ourselves dealing with people who negotiate 20 deals before breakfast. And this is an afterthought for many of us. It's not what we want to do. Do we have to, in this current environment, start training medical professionals to be more savvy about these costs and to understand really what goes into the business side of a medical practice? Dr. Patterson.
Well, I think that you're seeing more and more medical schools who are offering joint MD-MBA programs. It's a reality. I think in a way it's sad because when you're spending time learning about the business of medicine, that's time that you're not spending learning about the medicine side of medicine. And the problem with that is that the field of medicine is like drinking out of a fire hose every day. There's thousands of articles published in the biomedical literature every year, and you can't begin to keep up with it. So every doctor is hopelessly behind. And so when you distract those people and now make them focus on the business of medicine as well, it's a distraction, and it's not a good distraction, I don't think.
So is there a path forward out of this? I mean, what we see is actually the number I'd been using, the 600% increase is now outdated. It's actually 700%. Even in the face of this kind of firestorm of controversy and concern, the costs keep climbing for EpiPens. Is there hope that it will be contained in any way, Dr. Holmreich?
Well, I think as Dr. Patterson mentioned, when generics have become available, and we trust companies that make generics, that it will drive down the cost of some drugs. There are drugs in development called biologics, which are very difficult to make. And when you look at the cost of an EpiPen compared to some of the cost of biologics, which can be thousands of dollars, I think one of the big concerns about the EpiPen, it's an old drug, a medicine that's 100 years old, and a device that's 30 years old that keeps getting more expensive. So I think when you're talking about an EpiPen, the conversation is a little different than a newly developed product that may be controlling a very difficult disease that there never was a medicine for. So a lot of the hubbub about this EpiPen stuff is it's an old drug and an old device with a big increase in cost. Mm-hmm. There are some expensive medications, like now there's a cure for hepatitis C. That was not available, and that's $45,000, but it cures a fatal disease. So there are some justifiable costs. EpiPen is not one of them.
Well, I think that will have to be the last word. Unfortunately, I feel like we could talk a lot more about this, and clearly our listeners would be interested in doing so. If I could, Dr. Patterson, Dr. Holmreich, if you would not mind visiting our Facebook page, we're still getting questions in there, and perhaps you could respond and continue the conversation there if that would be okay. Would that be possible for you?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to thank our guests, Dr. David Patterson and Dr. Mark Holmreich. I'd also like to invite our listeners to come back on Tuesday when we're going to be celebrating the centennial of Indiana's Red Cross. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.